Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Smartphones are ruining our children's mental health. Well, that may sound alarmist, but that's exactly the alarm bell that Jean Twenge is ringing in her new book, iGen, Why Today's Super-Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. She's a professor of psychology at San Diego State University, and she joins us from San Diego. Jean Twenge, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. And, you know, we have a ton of listeners in our audience who may be driving their kids home from school right now, so I would love to know what they think. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK if you have some thoughts about smartphones and your kids. So, Jean, if I just may ask, your book and your article in the Atlantic Monthly has received an enormous amount of response. I think it's passed through my various social media feeds dozens of times. In a nutshell, what's your argument? Are you concerned about smartphones and young kids, not so much millennials, but the generation coming up right behind them?
Yeah, so that's iGen, those born 1995 and later, who's the first? They're the first generation to spend their entire adolescence with a smartphone. So I've been doing work on differences among generations for about 25 years, and right around 2012, I started to notice some sudden changes in these really big national surveys filled out by teens every year. And right around that time, more teens started to say that they felt useless, that they felt like they couldn't do anything right. These are classic symptoms of depression. More started to say that they felt lonely and left out. Fewer were saying that they were happy. And then these trends showed up in other very large, big surveys. A national screening study showed a big increase in clinical-level depression. The suicide rate for teens has doubled or tripled among some age groups in the past 10 years. And it just so happens 2012 is the year that the percentage of Americans with a smartphone crossed 50%. So that's what got me started thinking maybe there's a connection here.
Okay, so help me understand something, because when you said that the numbers and the surveys were showing this, is this the Monitoring the Future survey series that you're talking about?
So in the first few examples, yes, that's Monitoring the Future. Then there's the National Screening Study for Clinical Level Depression. And then there's the CDC data on the suicide rate.
I see. So as you know, I mean, you've received an enormous amount of response for your book and your article. And there are some people out there who are saying, well, you know, their first concern is that the standard correlation does not equal causation. So how can you say that it's smartphones per se?
Right.
That are causing these shifts.
Yeah, so that's always the challenge in doing work on cultural trends and generational trends. You can document the changes, so it's extremely clear that this generation is suffering from more mental health issues than teens were just 5 years ago or 10 years ago. But then the question is why? So the timing lines up. We know that. But then the question is, okay, is increased screen time linked to mental health issues? So it is in correlational data. Then the next question is, well, that's a correlation. Maybe the causation goes the other way. Maybe teens who are unhappy then, say, spend more time on social media rather than social media leading to unhappiness. But there's three other studies that looked carefully at that that kind of rule out that explanation of unhappiness leading to more use. Mm-hmm. So two followed people over time and found that more social media use led to more unhappiness, but not vice versa. Another was a true experiment, randomly assigned people to either give up Facebook for a week or not, and found that those who gave up Facebook ended the week happier, less depressed, and less lonely. Yeah. So no, it is not 100% definitive, but it's a fairly large amount of evidence pointing in that direction that, okay, these are things that are linked among individuals and the timing lines up.
Yeah, so there's this challenge, right, of saying, okay, well, so the data are pointing us to more interesting and deeper questions. Like, is it something fundamental to the smartphone? Is it something fundamental to the social media that people are accessing via the smartphone? Or as one reviewer, actually a couple of reviewers were pointing to, like maybe it isn't so much kids' use of smartphones, but adult use, and that the kids are fighting for attention, trying to get their parents' attention. So like, how do we understand sort of where the next level of analysis should be in terms of these changes that we're seeing?
Yeah, so is it the parents not paying attention to the kids? Well, maybe, but we know for sure that the teens who are spending more time with screens are showing more mental health issues. You know, plus, I think you have to consider the big picture here in terms of, okay, if we think this, there might be a connection here, what should we do? Well, the good news is the connection doesn't show up until more than 2 hours a day or more of use. So that doesn't mean we need to be taking those smartphones completely out of kids' hands. That's how they socialize these days. But if they're using it an excessive amount, most teens, by most surveys, 6 to 8 hours a day during their leisure time. So there's definitely room for improvement here. And I think the other part is if they're using it that long, and this shows up in the overtime data too, they have less time to see their friends in person. And we know that spending time with other people face-to-face in social interaction, that that is linked to better mental health. So it could be just that, not even the screens themselves. Even if we say, okay, we're going to call screens a neutral, they're taking up so much time that teens don't have the time anymore to go out with their friends, to just hang out, to go to the mall, to go to a movie together.
Uh-huh.
And that's linked to mental health.
So this is really interesting because a couple of years ago we had Sherry Turkle on, MIT researcher. You know, she's written a lot about technology and social media and human interactions. And you know, she was talking to us about how, yeah, it's true, young people do have their phones on with them a lot, but in a way they're socializing together with their phones. So maybe it's unclear in terms of how much that face-to-face contact has been reduced, or do you have other data about that?
There's very good data on that. So that's also from Monitoring the Future. So the amount of time the number of times a week that teens go out without their parents plummeted, especially after 2010. The percentage who get together with their friends informally every day has also just completely tanked. And then pretty much everything across the board that teens do to get together with their friends and hang out with them, riding around in a car, going to a movie, going to a mall, the iGen teens, those in the 2010s, do that less than teens just 10 years ago.
Hmm. So there's another aspect of what you wrote that's really caught a lot of people's attention. And I'm wondering if you could help me or help us understand it. Because as you're saying, there's like reduction, you see evidence of reduction of interaction. Also, I think you wrote about how kids are not getting their driver's licenses necessarily at the same age, how alcohol consumption has gone down and things
right.
like that. And so there was a couple factors in there which made me think, actually, maybe that's not such a bad thing.
It's not. It's absolutely not. Well, the driver's license and drinking alcohol are part of a larger trend that is only perhaps partially due to smartphones because it's been going on since the 90s. So smartphones can't be the primary cause. So iGen teens, by their senior year in high school, less likely to have the driver's license, work at a paid job, go out without their parents, date, have sex, and drink alcohol. So what all those things have in common, it's not are they all bad or are they all good. What they have in common is these are all things that adults do and children don't. So iGen is taking longer to grow up, probably because of larger cultural trends towards smaller families, the way the economy has changed, that people need more years of education. It's a lot of different trends. Now, those trends did accelerate in the last 10 years, so the smartphone might have a role to play later on, but those are caused by a bigger trend.
Yeah. So I'm going to, full disclosure here, I'm the parent of two. They're on the much younger end of things. They're still in their single digits. So this is something I think about all the time. And I have to say, on the one hand, I see the absolute power of technology, right? Whether it's smartphone or not, in terms of giving kids access to the world of knowledge. And I see how young people use it. It is deeply empowering. And I admire their facility with it. On the other hand, and listeners, you can call 800-423-8255 and tell me how I'm wrong about this. But like emotionally, I kind of freak out, right? Because I see how much kids are attached to their phones. And when I My kids don't have them yet, but when I go home, I try to put mine in, you know, in a cabinet, put it away from them, and I have a hard time keeping it in a cabinet because of my own dependency on it. So, I feel like we have a clash here between parental emotional reaction to how they see their children using technology versus, I think, what still may be an unsettled or inconclusive understanding of what the long-term effects are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Well, I have three kids myself. They are 10, 7, and 5. Well, the average age for kids to get their first smartphone these days is 10, which is very, very young. And these mental health effects tend to show up the most strongly in the younger teens. So this research has definitely informed what I am doing and will do with my own kids, which is to put off getting a smartphone until they're probably 14 or so. We'll see how it goes. But then, you know, when I analyzed some of this data, I made a graph for the book of the correlation between happiness and activities. Pretty much every screen activity was linked to less happiness. Pretty much everything you can do not on a screen, get together with friends, go to religious services, play sports or exercise, even do homework. All of those were linked to more happiness. When I made that graph and saw how stark that was right in front of me, I got up from my seat, took my kids' tablets, because we'd gotten them each their own tablet, and shoved them in the back of my dresser drawer. Huh. I was kind of shocked that they didn't even really notice that much. They ended up doing other things. They would go outside. They would draw. They would fight with each other. You know, they would do other things. And it has really helped because when they had their own tablet and it was time to go to bed or time to leave to go somewhere or do something else, then they would cry. They didn't like having that taken away. But when it's time to close the book or stop drawing or stop playing outside, it's an easier transition. It's not as addictive.
Yeah.
So that helps too.
Well, I'm speaking with Jean Twenge, and I'm sorry that I mispronounced your name earlier. My apologies.
I'm used to it.
My last name is Chakrabarty. Tell me about it.
Yeah, right.
She's author of iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. Give us a call with your thoughts at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And I'm especially looking forward to hearing from people out there who think that maybe we're off base in this conversation and that technology is not a problem at all and they see only upside for their kids. Again, 800-423-8255. Let's go to Mike. He's calling from Cohasset. You're on the air, Mike.
Hey, Magna. Hey, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, no, the article is incredibly eye-opening in the sense that as an Apple Distinguished Educator, we've been focused on creating multimedia projects that enable kids to collaborate together interpersonally to create using technology. And so what I've seen is that not only is the thinking strategies and the creativity and the interpersonal relationships really taking off, they're getting together after school to collaborate and create these projects just for the fun of it that aren't homework but that get to all of these critical 21st century skills. And so I'd be interested to hear, A, because I see the upside of it, if you guys have any suggestions for what teachers can do to help kids become more aware of how they use technology as opposed to just whether or not, you know, it's good or bad.
Mike, great question. Thank you for your call. Jean, your thoughts?
Yeah. So, you know, technology is great. Smartphones are great. So they are a tool that we can use. So when it comes to students working together in a multimedia project, it's clearly one of the benefits of this technology. The downside is when you have the teen who done with homework and then the rest of the evening and into the night is on that phone. And that's a very, very common story of that, you know, 6 hours a day or more of use. And they're doing that instead of doing these things that are more beneficial for their mental health, their social skills, their academic skills. Because you have to think about what are most teens doing when they're on the phone? They're usually not looking up information. They're usually not reading books or magazine articles. We know that they're not from these surveys. Instead, it's almost all communication with friends electronically and entertainment.
So, Jean, let me just jump in here because hearing what you said, it feels to me that the issue perhaps isn't so much the smartphone, but rather parenting and society, because I imagine that there are many people out there, many in communities, for example, where perhaps it's possible that the phone is filling in a void that's left by a lack of the kind of community activities, sports, faith communities, volunteer organizations, what have you, the kind of stuff that young people might have had easier access to in the past, and for whatever reason now, they don't.
Well, maybe. I mean, sports and exercise is down by just a little bit. Community service is either unchanged or up, depending on which age group you're looking at. Religious services, yes, that's definitely down among teens. But the stuff that's gone down the most is very informal. It's things like just going out or hanging out with your friends informally, which you can do at home. That's what's really changed the most. So although there's some of that, a lot of it is just many teens don't feel the need to get together with their friends in person. And because the norm has shifted to communicate electronically, the problem is there's been this assumption that electronic communication is just as good as face-to-face communication. I think it's pretty clear from the literature that it is not as good.
All right. Let's take a call from Lisa. She's calling from Roxbury. You're on the air, Lisa.
Hi, I'm a middle school teacher in Roxbury, and I collect phones daily for two reasons. One, so that students aren't using them while we're having academic time, but also because the anxiety of them having their phone in their pocket and constantly thinking that they need to check how many likes they have or don't have, lack thereof, it creates this anxiety, and the depression you talk about, it's so evident. You know, I teach the tough years of the 12, 13, and 14, and what I've seen in the past 14 years of teaching is the decline in self-confidence in class, self-confidence just in life in general. And I guess where I have a question is, are there some developments that you know of interventions that parents can do, teachers can do? Maybe it's with social media awareness or media awareness, but basically something that can kind of slow those staggering numbers down of kids that are dealing with depression from being attached to their phones.
Lisa, thank you so much for your call. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's right. I mean, this is what's showing up, not just the mental health issues, but anxiety, depression, self-confidence, self-esteem has gone down. Life satisfaction has really gone down. They are less confident in the classroom. And there's a study that does exactly what she's describing. When people have their phone in their pocket or on the table, if they know it's there, but they can't check it, anxiety just goes up and up and up. And that's college students. That's not even middle school students. So in terms of interventions, I think we do have to think about that, because even though the data is not definitive, we can't take that chance that smartphones are playing a role in this really disturbing rise in mental health issues. So for parents, you can put an app on your teen's phone that can limit the amount of time they spend on, say, social media, that can shut down that phone at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night so they can get a good night's sleep. Just limiting this, yes, having them still do it, but especially for older teens, giving them a little more freedom. But for middle school, that's where the mental health effects are really strong.
So let me ask you, because I actually hear a couple of things in what you just said, and I want to tease them apart for a second, because, I mean, absolutely, I'm going to get a neurologist in here next time to talk to us about what the biochemical effects are on a young brain of constantly having a device lighting up and pinging next to you. I mean, part of me feels like it's a lot like, a slot machine constantly pinging.
That's pretty much what it's like, according to most of the studies.
The dopamine squirt, right,
yes,
that your brain gets.
Right.
That's one thing. But on the other hand, you know, hearing about the anxiety that we're linking to it, I also wonder how much the anxiety or communication about depression has to do with the fact that positively we as a society have gotten a lot better about talking about mental health issues. We screen for it. We, you know, there's a language for it. It's not sort of swept under the rug anymore. Is it possible at all that, you know, a generation that we've spent trying to get better and more open-minded about mental health issues is actually, I don't know, getting kids to demonstrate some of those same symptoms? I mean, is that possible at all?
With this type of data, it's highly unlikely.
Okay.
So first, that can't possibly explain the suicide rate. That's
right.
A behavior.
Right.
Second, these national screening studies do a very good job of making sure that these responses are anonymous. Monitor in the Future was designed to pick up on drug and alcohol use, even illegal drugs, among teens. So they take every possible step to say, look, this is anonymous. It's not going to be linked up. And this increase in the mental health issues was very sudden. It didn't like slowly rise in a way you might expect if there was like increased acceptance or something. It just suddenly shoots upward right around the time the majority of Americans got a smartphone. So I think it's very unlikely that that's the explanation.
I want to take another call here quickly. But before we go further, just I want to fact check something with you, because someone who wrote quite a critical review of your book said that you wrote a 2010 paper that said that the Monitoring the Future data set doesn't measure anxiety or depression. So it's impossible to test changes in mental health using those data.
That's an easy one. I was wrong. The data set has more than 1,000 questions in it, and it turns out measured depressive symptoms is on the very last form, which doesn't have a lot of forms on it. It doesn't have a lot of questions on it, and I hadn't fully explored the data set at the point that I wrote that, when I had only been working with the data set for a few months.
Let's take one more call here. We've just got 2 minutes left. Glenn is calling from Arlington. You're on the air, Glenn.
Hi. I'm listening to this. I get this sense of a sort of us versus them attitude of adults versus youth. And as a volunteer working with a church group for many years, I found that there's a lot of untapped resource in asking young people themselves to talk about what they see as the issues, because they can articulate this much better if we give them a chance rather than just putting an app on their phone that forces something to happen. I think there's a collaboration that we need to have in this case, rather than, you know, sort of the adults forcing themselves on the youth.
Glenn, thank you so much for your call. I'm taking it back from you because we just got a minute to go. Jean Twenge, your thought on that?
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful point, that we do need to be working with teens. So the whole point of my book of iGen was to sum up not just the numerical data on 11 million young people, but also to listen what they had to say in open-ended surveys, in-depth interviews. And what they told me was they see the negative effects of the phone. Many of them see it every day. They say, when my friend is looking at her phone when I'm trying to talk to her, it hurts. They say that they know that it's not a great way to be happy. Many teens really like it when adults say, okay, we're going to put away our phones now, because they feel like it's mandatory and there's this peer pressure involved. So absolutely, that's exactly what we need to be doing, is start this conversation with teens.
Well, Casey Brown just sent me a tweet saying, some of this sounds like what we heard in the 80s and 90s about kids watching too much TV. And to that point, I would say my answer is moderation in all things, perhaps, is one of the lessons to draw from this. Jean Twenge, professor of psychology at San Diego State University and author of iGen, Why Today's Superconnected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. Thank you so very much for joining us. It was great to have you on the show.
Thanks.
And listeners, let us know what you think. As always, go to RadioBoston.org and send us your comment, or, you know, I'm on Twitter @RadioBoston. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.